Welcome to the sidelines. It is yet another Bruins post-game edition. I think we're just going to stop doing full episodes from here on out. Hopefully the Bruins keep playing. They win the cup. We'll just do a nice half hour. We'll see how long this one goes, but there's plenty to get to after that one. There's some obvious stuff that we need to get into, but I think I'm going to start with our initial takeaways from the Bruins winning 3-1 game three. Over the Carolina Hurricanes, they take a 2-1 series lead. I thought a really good afternoon overall. My big takeaway just on the ice is that the lineup changes made a huge difference, I thought. They put Jack Stadnik in there. I noticed him. His skills tends to stand out. He has the puck. I mean, it would be great to start scoring, but, I mean, other than that, Charlie Coyle had a dominant day, goal and assist. He's all over the place. If he starts scoring consistently, that's going to be a huge development for the team. And Jaro Halak steps in, and I thought, other than one really, really bad mistake, had a really good afternoon when it came to just, you know, doing what he's supposed to do, which is stop the puck. I thought he was really good, and I thought they had a good response to Carolina's response. Their top line didn't look nearly as dangerous as it did in game two. I thought maybe it probably took a period for the Bruins to really get their footing with all the lineup changes, but second, third period, they were mostly dominant. And thankfully, that bonehead error by Halak didn't come back to bite them. But Ty, your initial takeaways from the game on the ice today?
I would say that Halak is the story. I thought that he was fantastic. What I liked about Halak's game, it was that it was a 29 of 30 shutout. He stopped every shot that was actually thrown on net. Huge game for him. I thought it was, this was an important game, especially, you know, they're on the penalty kill 12 seconds into the game. Halak hasn't played in 13 days. You know, if there's a goal there, the whole game may unravel. And so that was important to not have that happen, to have him play well. And that 15 save first period, I mean, that sets the whole tone for the game, I thought. And you know, you get on board with some special teams goals, and that's the difference. But I thought that Halak was a big takeaway here for obvious reasons, obvious and not so obvious reasons. You know, the one, replacing Rask, but the secondly is just how he looked. You know, he didn't look like he had almost 14 days of rust. He looked ready to go, which is huge.
Yeah, it took the words out of my mouth. I think the biggest saves he made were in that first 2 minutes when they were getting swarmed on that power play. Brad Marchand gets penalized for breathing on Sebastian Aho. And so Halak has to step up, but he looked sharp. He was aggressive. He looked like he was nice and loose, and, you know, he's ready to go. And the team seemed to rally around him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's sort of what I think you expected, right? Like, you watched the Canadiens yesterday and the way they're playing, you know, for Claude Julien, so to speak, right? And I got a little bit of a similar vibe here where the Bruins realized the situation they're in. They realized the situation Tuukka Rask is in and Jaroslav Halak. And they tightened up. I think they tightened up when they needed to. There were some moments where it got a little dicey. But other than that, I thought that they really buckled down and their layers were fantastic towards the end of the game, I thought. Yeah. So that was a big difference.
I thought in their own zone there was way more structure, and they stopped chasing the puck, watching the puck. They just stayed responsible with their assignments, and I thought that that made a huge difference. They said, "All right, we'll try to defend this east to west game you guys are trying." And I thought they did a much better job.
Yeah, that was the thing you notice, I think, when you watch this game, especially after the first period. A lot of what Carolina was doing is they'd have some zone time, but they'd basically just have passing options. They wouldn't have shots. You know, there really wasn't a lot of shooting lanes there for them, which was a big difference, and it obviously helped Halak, you know, as the game wore on. So that was a big thing, I thought. And arguably, I think, in my opinion, it was the difference. You know, that point shot that had been killing them the first two games wasn't there.
Yeah.
Really didn't notice it much at all. Was not a threat for the Hurricanes at all in this game.
Yeah, I just think switching out Lozon for Clifton, and then Stadnik and Lindholm in for Richie. And, I mean, obviously Pastrnak's still out. But I think putting Stadnik and particularly Clifton and Stadnik in there made a big difference as far as just the speed and the skill, which I think that just makes it a much better matchup for the Hurricanes. I think, because I've been on Team Lozon this whole time, but I'm starting to think sort of along the same lines as Richie that those two guys will be much better if and when the Bruins get past this series and then they have to play heavier lineups. I think you'll see more of those guys. But I hope Sadiq is in there to stay. People were saying he should get a look on the top line. I didn't necessarily disagree with that. But, yeah, what did you think about those two particularly?
Yeah, it's tough when, you know, you're Anders Bjork, you're 23 years old, you can't take three penalties in 7 minutes of ice time. You just can't do it. That will make the difference between winning and losing a series if you're against a stronger power play. So that was a problem. The idea of Stepnika being on the top line is intriguing because if you can hide a player's deficiencies, it's with Bergeron and Marchand, right? I mean, that was sort of what that line was for years. It's, oh, you put this younger player there and you hope it works out. So it's an interesting idea. I'd like to see them get a practice in and explore it.
Yeah.
But I thought that Stepnika, I thought that it was interesting to watch a third period and to see him have some ice time. A one-goal game in the third period, he's getting shifts. You know, that's huge for what he is. You know, a player with, what, 3 total games of NHL experience? That's a massive step forward, and it speaks to the confidence that they either had in him or they're trying to instill in him, maybe leading to a bigger role down the road.
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, when he controlled the puck, he honestly looked kind of like Marchand, but the way he was able to control the puck, spin away from guys, find open space – I like him. I kind of do want to see him get a shot on that top line, but I guess that's – I don't want to be too reactionary about Bjork. People are saying take him out of the lineup entirely. I think they should just move him down and keep
him fairly coil.
I don't know about taking him out of there entirely. But
no, I wouldn't.
Yeah, step back for him. I mean, I guess that's the one real, like, nitpick you can have with the game.
Yeah. No. But it does create an interesting, you know, discussion, though. What if Pastrnak is ready to come back? Who do you take out? I thought Lindholm had a good game. I don't know if I want to take him out. I thought he played his role effectively.
He was solid, but I mean, I don't see him as a guy that, like, you have to keep him in there.
No, Nat, but it might speak to, you know, do they want to give Stepnika that look? Or, you know, has Bjork fallen out of favor that much? I mean, it's an interesting discussion that they'll have to have, but I'm curious, you know, especially too, Coyle and Corrali get on the board. It's a shorthanded goal, yeah, but are they developing some chemistry now? So do you want to take that away? It's the domino effect here with this team is very real right now.
Is Corrali a Massachusetts guy? I'm losing track with all these Bruins guys from that. You got Weymouth, you got Walpole. If you told me Sean Corrali was from, like, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, that would not be
he's an Ohio guy, but I think he was born in, like, Jersey or New York, I think.
He was born at the Melrose Wakefield Hospital, then immediately transported to Ohio.
Yeah, no, he's a big Ohio guy. It's kind of funny. He was playing with Rick Nash, and that was, like, his idol growing up, obviously, as a young Columbus boy. So that's kind of cool for him. No, but he's an Ohio kid. He might be Boston by, like, you know, association at this point. He plays with so many guys that are from Boston that it's like, all right, you're
he's basically from Charlestown.
You're actually from Kingston, Massachusetts now, just so you know.
No, I'm from, they dunk his head in the toilet. No, you're from Kingston. Good game for Corrali. I think the big goals only is starting to show up, so that's good. Nordstrom, I thought, had another really good game. I think that fourth line's really showing up for him.
Yeah, Nordstrom's like a – I mean, big boy game for him. You know, I think he's been fantastic in the series. And he's doing the things that made him such an effective weapon last postseason. You know, he was kind of losing his spot in the regular season. He had games where he was losing nights to Anton Bleed and to Per Lindholm. And so he's kind of reestablished himself here now as their, I think, you know, their fourth line staple on the wing. I think that he's been just the shot blocking, the hitting, drawing penalties today. That's the kind of stuff you need from Nordstrom and what makes him such an effective player.
All right, let's dismiss with the pleasantries.
Yeah.
Release the hounds, Stu! We're doing this for 4 hours! Tuukka Rask opts out. Not the news I was expecting this morning. I was literally just hopping out of the shower, getting ready to throw the computer on and listen to Bruce Cassidy's press conference, and all of a sudden we're like, guys, we got to get this Tuukka news. I was like, what Tuukka news? Oh, God, what happened? Yeah. He has opted out. he said in the statement that there are things more important than hockey, and that is being with my family. I mean, speculation out there that it was an emergency, conflicting reports. Assuming it's not a family emergency, he simply wanted to be back with his family. And the guy did just have a baby. That's just like Dante Hightower, Patrick Chung with the Patriots. So I respect the decision. And I think mental health is still a way under-talked about topic in this country. And I worry about Tuukka Rask's mental health. This is the kind of decision where it's not a normal decision. The guy opts out in the middle of a series, a playoff series. Like, you just hope that everything's okay with him upstairs. And I hope that it's going to be okay with him when he gets back to his family and he's able to be with them. So I hope there's no emergency or anything like that. And if he wants to be with his family, I respect the decision. That's the same decision that Dante Hightower made and Patrick Chung. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously a highly controversial decision. We're talking about a highly polarizing player. And I mean, if that's what he wants to do, you have to respect the decision. It's a family thing. Family comes before everything. And I think the only criticism you can have is the timing of it. But I don't know that you could put that all on Tuukka. I think that there, you could look at the organization and think, like, why couldn't we figure this out earlier? Because the signs were there. I mean, he told the app he had a cough and sat out the first game of the round robin. Like, it just didn't seem like he really was completely into it. And his comments after game two were the most obvious indication of that. And I guess that it's obvious now that he really, his heart wasn't totally in it. So it's probably best for him and really best for the team that he moves on and goes back to his family. So what's your initial take on the news of Tuukka Rask opting out?
Yeah, I'm with you that it's not – it's tough because everyone wants – we live in a take society. You have to have a take. You have to have an opinion. What if I don't know? And I don't know. I don't know what's going on with his family. We don't know. So for me to sit here and say, he can't do that. He's a quitter. This means he's this or that. That is so I refuse to do that. I have no interest in telling you that a family emergency is not worth skipping out on the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in a bubble city.
I know, seriously.
That's not my job.
People really need to get a grip. Let's, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? And if at the end of the day, everything's fine, cool. Awesome. That's what I want. I don't care about what happens to this. I want this person and their family to be okay. You know, it's funny. Tim Thomas, when Tim Thomas walked away from the Boston Bruins in 2012, do you know why he walked away? He walked away because of his family.
Because Joe Haggerty was giving him shit. that's what my friends and I always joke about that.
He wanted to reconnect with his family. He had issues going on back home that he wanted to take care of. And if that's something similar with Tuukka, I'm not going to hold that against him. Your family is forever. Hockey is for 20 years if you're really good at it. You know, and that's – I understand that. And I think that people need to understand that. And I look at it this way. Would you rather have Tuukka Rask at 50% because his mind is a billion miles away, or would you rather him step aside, say, hey, I don't have this, and you give it to the guy that you've told me is the 1B on this team? I want the latter. I don't want a 50% Rask. I don't want a guy who's not in the right headspace to do his job effectively.
No,
and I think the people that do want him there at less than 100% only want him there so that their take, oh, I'm right about him. See, he's a quitter. He can't get it done. They're not mad that Tuukka Rask is bailing. They're mad that they now can't blame it on him if something comes up short. they've lost their scapegoat. And
yeah, the same
no
people.
Like,
it's really annoying. I put out a tweet earlier. It's like, you know, if Tuukka did what Halak just did, Pat, just flipping the puck right to Nino Niederreiter, you'd want to chop his head off and roll it down Causeway Street. So I don't want to see the excuses made for Halak. And obviously, the immediately, well, you know, Halak's just a backup goalie. He doesn't get paid with Tuukka. I do not want to hear about how much money he makes. That does not matter. That does not factor into anything, how they play on the ice. These guys aren't even getting paid right now. So I don't want to hear that excuse. And I don't want to hear anyone saying he's just a backup. A lot of those same people were saying, put Halak in. I guarantee you at least thought it in your mind. But like, I want Halak in there. I don't want Tuukka in there anymore. And like you said, like, so Halak's supposed to be a 1B. He's not just a backup. This isn't like – you could say that if they had to put Daniel Vladar in. Then you'd say, okay, this is a backup. He doesn't have the experience. Halak is a very experienced goalie. He could start on a lot of teams. So I want to see you judge him fairly. I want to see say if he gives up a bad goal, it was a bad goal. I don't want you to say, well, it's just a backup. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just I want the two people to be consistent about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now the expectations change because now Halak is your starter, right? So he needs to be held to a starting goaltender level of performance. Today you got it. So let's hope it continues. But I just it's tough for me because I think the RAS conversation and the RAS discourse has just been twisted beyond all realms of reality at this point that, you know, people are so dug in on either side that no matter what is said or what is done, they're going to feel like he did this or he did that, and they're going to find ways to absolve whoever replaces him of any blame because it's not him. So in their opinion, it's an upgrade. You know what I mean? Like, the discussion is just right. So warped that it's impossible to actually have a conversation rooted in reality.
This goes back to our last full podcast. The title of the episode was Tuukka Can't Win, which has a multi-layered statement. Just a brilliant title by me, I must say.
True.
Like, if Halak doesn't play well and they lose, say Carolina comes back and wins this series in 6 or 7 games and Halak doesn't play particularly well, they're still going to blame it on Tuukka. They're going to say it's because Tuukka backed out. Well, it's like, well, if Tuukka played and they lost, then you would blame it on him. So now you're blaming it on him for not playing? It's like Tuukka can't win. The guy wants to be with his family. He's probably having psychological issues being stuck in the bubble with an infant child at home. Mm-hmm. And, I wish they figured this out before they ever went to the bubble. That's something they really should have figured out earlier. But the guy wants to be with his family. And, like, I feel like too many people are going to hold that personally against him. When I think the more important thing is to just judge what's going on the ice now. And what we saw on the ice was good today overall.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And honestly, like, I am very I'm with you in the sense that I think that, people say they care about mental health until it involves someone they don't like. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what it is. A lot of people don't like this guy. So they're going to say, hey, there are family issues going on. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the lowest of the low to me. And especially when you look back at what's happening here post-game or pre-game, Sweeney talks about the family. Okay. After the game, Cassie talks about the family. Chara talks about the family. Coyle talks about his family. And so does Yaroslav Halak. And people are going to sit here and still believe and still tell you that they think he's opting out because he's a quitter. What is wrong with you? Have the worms eaten your brain entirely that you are this incapable of? You're going to sit here and tell me that you think that this is all one big elaborate scam by the Boston Bruins organization to bail this guy out and basically say, hey, we're going to make your family a fake victim here. So your child is going to be, you know, the fall here. But nothing's wrong. But we're going to make it so your children seem like the reason why you're – like what – why would that ever happen? Why would that ever happen in a million years?
I want these Twitter hardos to be told that, like, you know, we're going to make you go work across the country alone, quarantined, and you're not going to be able to see your family for 6 months. See how they react. Fall River Proud Fathers over here talking about how tough they are. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, it's all right. So we can relate this back to, you know, 2 months ago or a month ago, I was having a bad time. I was having a very bad time. And you know what I did? I went to you and I went to Tim and I said, hey, I need to take a little break. My mind is not where it needs to be for me to be effective for this station, for this company, for this website. Nobody looked at me and said, oh, you can't. Oh, you're too soft. You can't do it. Like, it's like
the you're just a blogger. You can't handle it.
And it's like the lack of empathy, you know, and that's my life versus a guy with the kind of stakes and the salary that, you know, he has. He's doing a lot more than I am. You know what I mean? Right. And so the lack of empathy is just, it's just crazy to me. It's just, it's absolutely crazy. I get it. I get you're pissed. I get you want to have the best roster available. But there's a good chance that if you're ragging on Tuukka right now, you didn't believe in him anyways. So what are you complaining about? Isn't this what you wanted? Don't you want to see this? So I don't know. It's just, I've learned better than to expect any sort of rational thought when it comes to this at all.
Anyone who tells me like Locke's just a backup or that like, he's not getting paid the amount of just go back and look at your own tweets about Halak. I guarantee there are tweets in there where you say put Halak in the net. You know, it's like just try not to be a hypocrite about this. I guess there's not much you can say about that. You know, I hope everything's okay with Tuukka. I hope he's gonna be okay when he gets home. Mm-hmm. And you got to move forward with Halak, and he's off to a good start. We'll see how it goes in later rounds. The Bruins, I think, are clearly the superior team, even without David Pastrnak out there. So, I mean, we'll see if and when they get past Carolina. We'll see how it goes against more skilled teams. But
I ultimately, this was a gigantic step for them. If they lost this game, I would have been very nervous about where things are trending, because now you're down in the series. Pastrnak, you don't know what's going on. The goaltending, you know, he loses his first start in 13 days. He still hasn't won since the bubble.
Right.
So this is huge now. And now it feels like, you know, you're having more of an actual, you know, you're working from a position of strength right now, which is crazy to say when you lose your Vezina finalist goaltender and you lose the Rocket Richard winner within 48 hours. But here the Bruins are up 2-1. So now comes time to try to take a stranglehold in the series.
Yeah, to your point, I think it probably does help the team that maybe it helps. Maybe it gave them a confidence boost knowing that, like, not to blame Tuukka, but like to know, just knowing that they have a goalie who's totally in it now, that maybe that helped them play a little freer. Maybe they were feeling as anxious themselves, like knowing that, like, you know, I feel bad because Tuukka probably doesn't really want to be here, and you know, we have to do the best we can. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe it helped loosen them up a little bit, because they were absolutely dominant once those newly configured lines got it all together and, you know, started to gel. So hopefully good things moving forward. Be interested to see how Carolina responds. But sucks, really, really sucks for the Hurricanes that they might have just lost their best player. Andrei Svechnikov got all twisted up. He was holding his knee after falling to the ice in that little scrum with Zdeno Chara. He was holding his knee, so that's, I mean, it's not bad and not good at all. It looks like it could be an ACL injury. So, I mean, I really hope it's not. Guys, I said he's the next Ovechkin, and of course someone's first response, well, slow down on that. It's like, just bear with me here. Guy's Russian. That's all I was saying. truly a dynamic player. I think probably their best player. I mean, you could say Aho's a little further along in his development, but Svechnikov is going to be a superstar in the league. So, I mean, huge, huge loss for them, and I think it'll say a lot about the makeup of the Hurricanes to see how they respond if they have to move forward without him. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a big loss, and it sucks because I think he is one of the – I was really enjoying the one-on-one matchup with Svechnikov against Chara and McAvoy. I was really enjoying that matchup. I thought it was fantastic. You know, theater for playoff hockey. And it was great to see the ebbs and flows of that matchup. And now it looks like it's going to be off the table. I can't imagine that he's back in action. I mean, that looked about as bad as an injury can be. When you see the skate plant and you see the knee or the ankle, whatever it is, twist
both.
Like that.
Both.
Yeah, that's not good. And so you wonder what it is. It feels like, you know, the fact that he wasn't putting any weight on it at all, it feels like it's almost best case scenario. It's a high ankle sprain. And
exactly,
those are massive recoveries.
Those linger.
For hockey, yeah. I mean,
not going to be the same guy if he plays through it.
Yeah, Lucic suffered one in 2009, and he told me he didn't feel like himself for about 7 months. You know, that's a so
bad injury.
If you miss about 6 weeks with those, I think, typically, but you don't feel like yourself until months after the actual injury. So I don't know what the injury is, but I'm just saying if that's what it feels like, best case scenario, it's hard to imagine him playing through this and playing effectively.
Yeah, I think it's a knee injury because they just showed it again on CNBC where the Avalanche and Coyotes are playing. Yeah, he clutched his knee immediately. So, I mean, that's ACL, MCL, one of those things. So it's probably a miracle if he didn't get a serious injury there. And But just switching back to Pastrnak, I said last time, if he had some sort of injury in his midsection, he's going to have to play through it at some point. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's concerning that he wasn't able to go today. Were there any actual updates after the game? Did Cassidy say anything about Pastrnak after the game?
No, not to my knowledge. Nothing in there. A lot of the questions were, as you could imagine.
They're all about Tuukka.
About Tuukka, yeah. So, no, nothing on that. We'll see. I mean, Monday, game four is an 8 o'clock puck drop, so he'll have time for morning skate if it's at all possible that he does return for game four. I'm convinced it has to be the oblique or the rib, whatever it is. It has to be. He was there. He didn't skate yesterday, but he was at the arena once again. There's no cast or anything on his hand. The thumb doesn't look like it's covered or wrapped with anything.
Oh yeah, it's in the mid side. It's a rib or something like that.
So we'll see. We'll see what it is. But what did you like about, or how'd you feel rather about the other decisions they made today? Scratching Richie and taking Kuhlman out and the change on the back end. I know you're a Lozon guy, but Clifton, I know you said this is a series more for Clifton. I like Clifton's game a lot today. I thought that's two good games in a row for him now.
Yeah, no, like I said before, I think Clifton is a better fit for this particular series than Lozon. He's faster and he can bring that physical edge too. He had some nice hits. And yeah, I think as far as his combination of puck retrieval and the physical edge that he brings, I think makes him a much better fit for the series. I don't like taking Coleman out for and then putting Lindholm in. I just don't know if that made too big of a difference. But I think taking Richie out definitely makes a big difference. I think you saw way more jump in the Bruins, and I think you need more jump against a team like this. And I'm going to maintain this. I think you put Richie and Lozon back in there if and when they get to the bigger teams. Like I was going to say the Capitals, but they look bad right now. But if you have to play Tampa for sure, yeah. Tampa. I mean, Tampa's a complete team, but they do have the big defensemen that you got to get through. So I mean,
Islanders have a heavier team too in terms of some big body defense and
yeah, and the Trotz style of play too.
Yeah, exactly. So. The Islanders, the Capitals, and the Blue Jackets as well. So you got a few teams there. The field, for the most part, I would say, beyond this team, this Carolina team, is conducive to Nick Ritchie. I truly believe that every other team remaining in this field, with the exception of the Hurricanes, will allow Ritchie to be better than he has been. The biggest problem with Ritchie.
See, I thought Richie was fine in the round robin. I didn't think he was that bad. I didn't think he started to really look bad until this series.
His best game was the Tampa game, and it was the most physically engaged game for him. And so you would imagine you get something similar in the next round. The biggest problem for me with Richie during the first two games was he was eating up a lot of offensive zone faceoffs and doing nothing with them. And in the postseason, you got to take advantage of those. That is the difference between winning and losing a series, is you need to be able to – if you get those chances, you got to do something with it. He had the second most offensive zone faceoffs among all Bruins forwards through two games at 5-on-5. He had no shots on goal. You can't do that. You need to have a shot on goal. If you're going to get that many faceoffs in the O-zone, you need to do something with it.
He's a butcher when it comes to actually handling the puck. But they're going to need him down the road. I'm going to maintain that. Keep the faster guys in there, unless what?
I was going to say, unless the Nika takes his chance and runs with it,
I hope so, man. I hope I've been wanting to pull a 2013 Sagan.
Yeah.
That's what I've been hoping for. I'm glad they put him in there. I mean, I guess they didn't really have much of a choice, but I don't know. If Pastrnak's back in there, I hope they still keep Stanika in there. And I mean, I didn't dislike Par Lindholm, but I just feel like he has to be the odd man out.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair. It's a totally fair point. It literally just all depends on who is available at that given moment, because we've seen with this postseason that you will have unfit to participates, and it'll force you to kind of put your lines in a blender and see what works.
Indeed. And if we have some thoughts on other series around the league. Did you see Bo Horvat last night by any chance?
Yes, he is very good.
I am very pleased to see these lumbering stiffs on the St. Louis Blues and their choking ass goaltender losing in the first round. I mean, it's obviously too early to say, but I just feel like the Blues' entire run last year was a fluke. And I'm really disappointed that the Bruins couldn't finish the job in that Game 7 last year. I think this is more what the Blues should have looked like, I guess, a team with speed and skill. Bo Horvat looks like a big-game player. And the game winner and Quinn Hughes with a really, really, really nice pass. I wish we could see a little more of that from Torrey Krug in the Bruins playoffs so far. But, I'm trying to watch more games, and I watched a lot of that game last night, and that was satisfying as a bitter Bruins fan.
As a bitter Bruins fan, and you know me, I've been a Jordan Binnington denier now, even after the Stanley Cup, saying that this guy's not that good.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, basically.
He only played one good period.
That bozo is going to be out of the NHL in a year and a half. The clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on Andrew Hammond 2.0, a.k.a. Or let me say racist Andrew Hammond. Jordan Binnington is going to get kicked out of there.
Yeah, he had some questionable ones, huh?
They're still there. He has deleted them.
He never deleted them. Wow, that guy's got balls.
You goober.
I don't know how to delete.
Yes, it's been very nice to watch St. Louis get their asses kicked. I'll always be bitter, whatever. It's an endearing quality, I suppose. But no, I would say that that's been a fun series. I've really enjoyed the Columbus series as well. That Columbus
Tampa series, game, honestly.
Yeah,
after that five overtime, I was like, I've seen enough of this series. I think I've reached the max.
Yeah, it's been good though. Columbus is just it's a tough out, man, for anybody. It's you look at the roster and then you look at Tampa's roster and you're like, how is this a series? You know what I mean? Like,
they're a pretty complete team too. Columbus. Yeah. I guess they don't have the superstar offensive guy.
Pierre-Luc Dubois is coming
back. Dubois is coming into his own, but yeah. I mean, he's not Panarin yet. He's not that guy. I guess that's the one thing they like, but they're a pretty balanced team too. So I'd be worried. I'd be a little concerned if the Bruins had to play them again.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say that with Columbus, some of the guys that they've had a lot of production from in the past have been almost too quiet. You know, Cam Atkinson finishes that five overtime game, I think, without a shot on goal, which, if you watch Cam Atkinson at all, that's not him. You know what I mean? He's a shot volume guy too. He might wake up, and if that happens, now are they an actual legit threat? And keep in mind, they're doing this all without Josh Anderson. You know, one of their breakout stars from last year. They lose Bobrovsky and Panarin, but they also lose Anderson because he's not playing right now. And so this team is just Tortorella knows how to turn those buttons to get those guys going.
Tortorella. I just hope they keep playing so we can get more torts for the post game. Love that guy. And if he was the Bruins coach, I would absolutely be crapping my pants before every press conference. Is this guy gonna kick my ass? What is going on with Washington though? Is it really just that they don't have Jock Carlson, who I understand is an extremely important player for them, but I don't know. They look sluggish and sloppy. They look almost worse than the Bruins looked in the round robin, even though they beat the Bruins. But it looks like their subpar play from the round robin has carried over into the actual playoffs. Is it just that Barry Trotz has Islanders pulling in the same direction and grinding out like they usually do with the system? Have you seen enough of that series to really make a judgment? Because I watched the game last night, and I was just like, the Islanders just look like straight up the better team, even though Capitals have more high-end talent. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a mix of Trotz knowing how to play the Caps. I mean, he coached them in the Stanley Cup. So
that's true, yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
But also, Holtby has been ass. He's been bad. Like, he's just been really bad. And it's interesting because, Holtby, he had the round robin where – he looked good. He looked good against Boston.
Bruins? No. Well, then I suck.
He looked good against Boston, but he looked good against Tampa too. When they lost that game in the shootout, I thought he had a pretty good game.
Big games only, Braden Holtby.
And then what happens is the actual playoff start, and he kind of reverts back to the regular season Braden Holtby, who sucked ass. So now he's ass again, and it's not good. They need not ass Braden Holtby. That is my very serious analysis.
Braden ass Holtby. Is that a good enough pun?
They need not ass Holtby.
That should be a new shirt. Braden ass Holtby.
Yes.
Oh man, yeah. Well, thanks for listening. Giving you plenty of hockey. I don't think this has gone beyond just a Bruins post game show. So I am making an executive decision to switch gears to the Patriots real quick, because the Patriots have their first padded practice on Monday. I unfortunately will not be in attendance because they're very, very restrictive as far as who's able to cover camp, which is totally understandable with the whole COVID thing. They're going to have, you know, just I think 15 outlets are going to be there every day. 98.5 The Sports Hub is one of them. But you're going to have Bob Soucy, the venerable play-by-play man for the Patriots, is going to be in attendance. He'll be covering camp. He's going to be I don't know if I'm giving something away before I should, but I think we're going to be able to talk to him on the air, and we will be able to, you know, relay his coverage to you whenever it comes in. We'll do the best we can to cover camp with the access or lack thereof that we have. I think everyone's going to be open to press conferences, and Patriots have had a lot of changes on the roster in terms of opt-outs. They had a rookie seventh-round pick retire. It's just like, yeah, never mind. I'm going to go be a lawyer or whatever the hell Dustin Woodard is doing his life. Good for him. Good for him. Out he made nowhere, the decision right? early. Yeah. He's like, yeah, never mind. He's like, guys, I didn't even think I was going to get drafted. What the hell's going on? I'm out of here. good for him. I respect the decision. And they released Nick Coe, who I thought he actually had a good chance to make the roster as an undrafted guy. But Alex Barr, my roster projection is just getting absolutely slaughtered. Is my takeaway from the roster moves that have taken place lately. So Alex Barth and I'll try to get my shit together, and Alex Barth and I will keep doing our roster projections, and then make people vote on who they thought was best, and then everyone will vote for Alex just to be incorrect and to make me upset. I understand you want to troll me. I get it. I can take that. But we'll try to cover camp as best we can. But Patriots are getting going in camp. It's going to be fun. We're going to get padded practices. I don't know. Have you seen any of their content that they posted? Because it's getting me all hot and bothered seeing Cam Newton in a Patriots uniform. But I did think it was interesting that he was third in line for reps. So, you know, that to me is just a statement that, like, talent and pedigree alone isn't going to earn you a job here. You really do have to earn the job. And I think that's the message they're trying to send to Cam Newton so far.
Yeah, I think that – and that's expected, I think, in a way. It's – let's be honest, he hasn't been fantastic over the last year and a half. No. He played two games last year.
He's honestly had like two good seasons in his career, for being honest.
Yeah. I
mean, he's obviously a very dynamic athlete.
Yeah, so I get it. And I'm curious to see how it all shakes out, honestly, given the lack of a preseason. You know, how can you truly tell who is the true number one starting quarterback on this team if you're never playing – like actual competition. The good news is they're going to go against Stephon Gilmore in practice. So that's great. That should help them. But again, it's harder to simulate sort of to have game action when you're only playing your teammates.
Yeah. What's going to be interesting is the camp coverage is actually, I think, going by the NFL guidelines, which is even more restrictive than the Patriots' own guidelines as far as what you can and cannot report. Mm-hmm. And I think the deal is like you can't quote unquote pair players, so you can't be like this quarterback completed a pass to this receiver, or like this guy is playing right tackle with the starters. You can't say first team, second team, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be interesting to see how people tweet and how people report about it. It's going to be like do you remember when Adrian Wojnarowski during the draft? I think it was 2 years ago when the Celtics drafted Robert Williams. He couldn't say he like they stopped letting him the NBA wouldn't let him tweet like they are drafting this player, so he would be like, he has a laser on this pick, or the Celtics are a titillated by Robert Williams.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to be that. It's going to be like, Cam Newton made a spectacular throw today, period. And N'Keal Harry, completely unrelated to the Cam Newton throw, also made a spectacular catch in the end zone. Like, that I think is going to be amusing. That, look, we need to, the tweets from training camp during our own Zolak and Bertrand are going to be riveting. And, I don't know. The information is going to be limited, but I think it's going to be fun. We're all in this together. That is COVID's catchphrase. We're all in this together, and we'll see how it shakes out. It depends
the
on
the Patriots
who
are focused in on. That was what it was. It was the focused in on. They wouldn't let him spoil the draft, so they had to say he was focused. The team was focused in on signing this player.
They are not tantalized, but they are intrigued by what this player has given them.
Yeah. Julian Edelman is focused on catching a ball. I mean, it kind of works.
Julian Edelman was laser focused when there was a football in the air, and it definitely did not hit him right in the hands, and it definitely was not thrown by Cam Newton. We can't. Well, that's all I can tell you.
We can confirm the ball was not thrown by Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer.
Ball was thrown by number two minus one.
Yeah, that's what it'll be. It's weird that we're like, I was actually thinking about that the other day, right? Like, so if this were a normal year, like, we'd be like preparing to cover preseason games right now, and there'd be no hockey on my radar for at least like a month and a half. It's thrown my whole just life schedule out of whack. Like, yeah. I honestly thought the other day, I'm like, oh yeah, it's like May 15th. I'm like, nope, it's August actually. It's not even close to being May.
Yeah.
It's been a really weird time.
Our schedule is just going to be, I don't know, I guess we're both working 20 hours on Monday because the Patriots are going to have their first padded practice, and the Bruins are playing at night, right? That game four is at an 8 o'clock game on Monday?
Game four is the 8 o'clock game, yeah.
And the Celtics are also playing game one against the 76ers. So, you know, I guess we'll just be on the clock all day. You know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's the life. I enjoy the covering teams that are in the playoffs. I have no problems with that. And as a four-time Pulitzer Prize winning basketball journalist, who I gave Bill Simmons his first job. So I helped him. I ghost wrote the book of basketball. So I think I have an authority on the topic here. Celtics are on fire going into the series, and Ben Simmons is out. Huge loss for the Sixers, so I'm looking forward to that series. And things always seem to get chippy between those teams. I mean, that is going to be good stuff. We're going to sink our teeth into that, and we're going to really sink our teeth into the Bruins. And I think the plan is we'll have another post game for you on Monday. But I mean, there's going to be plenty more to talk about. So maybe it'll turn out like this and become basically a full episode for us. And I think I'll give this one an official title. This will be a full episode. We covered all the bases. We covered everything there is with the Bruins. Do you have any closing thoughts? Anything? Any thoughts leading into the next Bruins game or anything like that?
The one thing that I want to get to, Dougie Hamilton has blocked pretty much the entire six-state region of New England on Twitter.
Yes, about this. Yes, this is good.
I've been blocked for years. But Lindholm high sticks him, and I make a joke that Lindholm is on the 13. He's on my team. And I post a picture of Hamilton blocking me. And then all of a sudden, they start flying, baby. He has blocked everybody, like literally everybody. And it's so strange because I was advocating for the Bruins to pay him. I said they should pay this man. And he does me like that. Oh, I'm happy they didn't sign your brother, you big freak.
He's
so
just
happy.
A weirdo, huh?
He's a weird person.
There's nothing wrong. I mean, block people. I don't care. I'm not one of these people like, I don't block anybody. I've blocked a few assholes. But, yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't get the whole, like, it's funny because, like, he's now, I think, fourth or third in my power rankings of sports figures who blocked me. Number one by far is Richard Sherman. Because
okay.
I never, because he's a great player. I love Richard Sherman, everything he brings to the table on and off the field. But I wrote an article for CBS Boston Sports that was basically just like reposting Seth Wickersham article about the Seattle having issues in the locker room going back to losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I never once tweeted anything about Richard Sherman or mentioned him or anything, and the guy blocked me. So it's like, So the guy's out here reading articles and then going and blocking the authors. And all I was doing was, like, I was literally just, like, shitposting, like, a blog about an article that a real reporter wrote. And, like, I don't know. I guess he's upset that the word got out about his team back then. Number two is Travis Kelce, because I literally said, this is back when Kelce was pulling a Dougie Hamilton and going on, like, a Boston blocking spree. And so I literally just tweeted and mentioned him. It's like, I wonder if Travis Kelce will just see this tweet and then block me. 20 seconds later, blocked. And, yeah, Wade Phillips is on that list. I literally never tweeted or wrote an article about Wade Phillips. So that, I think, that is the most mysterious.
Son of bum.
Son of bum. that is the most mysterious one of them all. It's like, oh, man, I like Wade Phillips. He's a good defensive coordinator. And then Bomani Jones, who was just annoying. You know, I called him out. He immediately blocked me. So it's, you know, it's whatever.
Rob Parker blocked me. Who else blocked me? I think Rob Parker blocked me when I tweeted "block me, you bitch." Like, I think I, like, said something like that at him.
I dare you to block me.
And Ben Roethlisberger had me blocked for a while, but not anymore.
That's an upset. He did not block me. That's an upset.
Yeah, but it was weird because there was a story that somebody said that he had blocked like millions of people on Twitter. Like, I don't think he runs his actual account. I think it's, like, his foundation, too. And I was like, I can't think of any time that I've ever tweeted about Ben Roethlisberger outside of, like, when the Patriots would play him and we'd be at Gillette covering the game. I don't really concern myself with Ben Roethlisberger. Like, I don't know. So, I don't know. Maybe he's a name searcher. He didn't like that I brought up the fact that he had one of the worst games I've ever seen in my entire life when the Steelers came here for opening night. Was it last year? That terrible showing on opening night.
Yeah. It's just bizarre. I don't know why athletes even bother checking Twitter, to be honest with you.
True.
I respect any athlete that just doesn't even look at that shit.
Right.
I don't know. Some guys like to get the word out. It's whatever. But, yeah, I guess we can leave it at that. If you made it this far, thank you. I love you. Please rate and review 5 stars only. Positive reviews only. Shout out to Hardy Forrester, the one guy to give us a review. This is back when we were saying we don't want to talk about Tom Brady all the time. And gladly we don't have to talk about him anymore because he is not on the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Patriots start Monday, and Bruins and Celtics also play Monday. We're going to have a lot to talk about then. Most likely get you another podcast late Monday night into the wee hours of Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Sports Hub Sidelines bonus episode transforming into a full episode along the way. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.